a total and complete economic collapse. Now, even if an economic collapse did not occur, if they were successful in conning the American people into accepting a cashless system, thus negating any reason for an economic collapse, there will still be a loss in our standard of living simply due to NAFTA. There is no way in the world, ladies and gentlemen, that the American laborer is going to compete with a Mexican laborer who can work for only 50 cents an hour. Their standard of living in this process will come up. Ours will go down, and we will meet somewhere in between. Life in this country is not ever going to be the same again. The middle class, ladies and gentlemen, is going to disappear, and that's exactly what this is intended to do. Karl Marx proposed free trade as a system of leveling the standard of living between the have nations and the have not nations, and creating class wars, which would bring about socialism much quicker. Don't believe it? Look at history. There's only one thing throughout the history of the world that has protected the assets of anyone during times of economic trauma, economic collapse, rampant inflation, or depression. It doesn't make any difference. The only way to preserve what you have is to put it into something that never loses its value. And ladies and gentlemen, throughout the history of the world, that has been precious metals in all of its various forms. Now, I'm not one to recommend to you high-value numismatic coins. For when you pay $1,000 for a coin that only has an actual value in gold content of $100, you've made a big mistake. Because if there is an economic collapse, and I assure you that there will be, there's not going to be a bunch of these coin dealers around to buy back what you bought. Now, there are gold and silver coins to where the numismatic value is within 15 or 20% of the gold value. These are good investments. Bags of junk silver are good investments. Pre-1964 silver of any kind is good investments. Now, this is according to me, and according to the investigative work that my organization, the Citizens Agency for Joint Intelligence, has performed over the years. There are many other things that are good investments that can protect your money. And I want you to understand, I'm talking about only protecting your money. I'm not talking about making profits. I'm not talking about turning something around in a couple of months to make a few thousand dollars. I'm talking about protecting your assets. And if you want to talk to some of the best, most honest people that I know who perform that function for you, call Swiss America Trading right now. It's 1-800-289-2646. 1-800-289-2646. And they're the only ones that I've heard on any of these shortwave broadcasts that will give you a buyback guarantee. A buyback guarantee, ladies and gentlemen. Call them and talk to them about it. And when you talk to these other so-called honest firms, have them send you in writing their buyback guarantee before you talk to them anymore. Do it now. Call 1-800-289-2646. You see, the Hour of the Time doesn't just take any sponsor. We had a lot of applications from a lot of different people. One of them was another firm that deals in precious metals. Out of all the people who applied to sponsor the Hour of the Time, we could, in all honesty, approve of only one. Swiss America Trading. Call them now. If they don't treat you well, you call me personally. because I want to know about it. I've never known them to be dishonest or to treat anyone badly or to cheat anyone or to lie to anyone or to ever give out bad information or wrong information, nor have they ever failed to disclose every single item in the contract that you make with them, not only once, but several times. So if you want to make sure that you're dealing with good, honest Christian people, call Swiss America Trading and talk to them tonight. 1-800-289-2646. I back them with my personal reputation, and I won't do that for anyone else. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Ladies and gentlemen, do it now. You'll be glad that you did. Can you remember, folks, can you even remember when you last bartered for something? I mean, personally traded something on a direct equal exchange? Well, it happens very rarely because it's difficult to find someone who wants exactly what you have and has exactly what you want, value for value. Thus, the problem with barter is lack of coincidence of wants and indivisibility. A dentist may want some potatoes, but the farmer may not necessarily want any dental work. Even if he did, it would be worth much more than the amount of potatoes the dentist needed, according to the prices that I see when I go to the dentist. Dental work, as most services, is indivisible in value. In other words, there's no pulling just half a tooth. And the dentist would find it impractical to make trades for lesser valued things, and if the farmer wanted to trade for a car, the dealership clearly couldn't accept a huge pile of perishable potatoes, now could he? A medium of exchange, a middle thing, if you will, is needed to facilitate indirect trades. Without a middle thing, we could never trade between large and small, divisible and indivisible, common and rare, perishable and non-perishable, near and far. You see, we need a middle thing which is accepted by dentists, potato farmers, car dealerships, and, of course, everyone else. This middle thing is called money. Money is the hub of society, operating as the common denominator between us all. Otherwise, we as specialists could hardly trade directly with each other, one-on-one. Every civilization is based on and requires indirect trade. For without indirect trade, the dentist would starve and the farmer's teeth would fall out, and then he'd starve. Without indirect trade, we'd all be surviving as primitive savages. Without money, there is no indirect trade, and without indirect trade, there is no civilization. Herbert Spencer once said, "And in societies of low civilization, there is no money." This middle thing, this money, must have some intrinsic amount of consistent value. To even have value, money must first be an article of commerce, a good, a commodity. Commodities are things which many people desire. Money is a certain commodity which nearly everybody desires anytime, any place. It can be used for something. Commodity has value other than for trade. Understand that. Historically, many different goods have been used as money. Tobacco in colonial Virginia, sugar in the West Indies, salt in Abyssinia, cattle in ancient Greece, nails in Scotland, copper in ancient Egypt, and grain beads, tea, cowrie shells, and fish hooks. Through the centuries, two commodities, and only two, gold and silver, have emerged as money in the free competition of the market and displaced the other commodities as money. The commodity chosen as a medium must be a luxury. Human desires for luxuries are unlimited, and therefore luxury goods are always in demand and will always be acceptable. Wheat is a luxury in underfed civilizations, but not in a prosperous society, not in New York. Cigarettes ordinarily would not serve as money, but they did in post-World War II Europe, where they were considered a luxury, and they did in Vietnam, where I served as a river patrol boat captain. The term luxury good implies scarcity and high unit value. Having a high unit value, such a good is easily portable. For instance, an ounce of gold is worth a half ton of pig iron. That's from Alan Greenspan's essay, Gold and Economic Freedom. And the second was from Ayn Rand's Capitalism, the Unknown Ideal. Money, folks, is money only because it's readily exchangeable for something else. And why is it readily exchangeable? Because it has a universally recognized intrinsic value. Intrinsic value, that means the value is within the object. Take out a Federal Reserve note and see if you can find any intrinsic value in that Federal Reserve note. You can't even use it to write on because it's covered with ink. Notice that historically, money, commodities, were useful, everyday items, either divisible, such as tobacco, sugar, salt, copper, tea, or small, such as nails, beads, seashells, or fish hooks. In pre-industrial times, these items were also luxury goods. However, the more advanced and prosperous a civilization becomes, the more advanced its luxury goods. By 1900, nails, salt, etc. were no longer luxury goods. Modern industrial technology and manufacturing had relegated them to being cheap and plentiful. Money is a means to an end. Money is rarely an end in itself. Few want money for its own sake. For example, in post-war Germany, cigarettes traded as money, even amongst non-smokers. Now, why would non-smokers accept a commodity for which they had no personal use? Folks, it's because they could easily trade cigarettes for something else which did have personal utility, and they knew that the cigarettes would always have value because they knew that those who smoked were addicted and must have cigarettes. To the non-smoker, cigarettes were only a means to an end. To the smoker, cigarettes were a necessity. So what is money? It must be three things. One, a reliable storehouse of intrinsic value. Two, a universal portable medium of exchange. And three, a common unit of account. Now, naturally, the first is the mother of the second. A commodity first must have consistent value to random individuals before it will ever be universally traded. And 6,000 years of human trading experience have decided for good reasons which commodities deserve to be used as money, and that's gold and silver. Now, you might ask, why have gold and silver emerged as the two favorite commodities trading as money? Because, folks, gold and silver are intrinsically valuable. They're scarce and difficult to mine. They're divisible. They're homogeneous, impossible to artificially produce. They're non-perishable. They're durable. They're easily fashioned into convenient coin and desirable for industrial uses, such as dentistry, jewelry, electronics, photography, chemistry, and many, many others. Their value by weight is neither too concentrated, as rare gems, nor too diluted, as iron. Silver operates neatly as a second tier for small trades, while gold has a more concentrated value for larger trades. And one last reason, gold and silver feel like money more than any other commodity, and that is extremely important. Subjectively, people sense that gold and silver are money. Nothing else has the allure of gold and silver. Until ocean mining becomes economically competitive, a very remote prospect, to say the least, gold and silver will rule the money mountain. All nations pay their debts in gold or silver. that the Federal Reserve note was so valuable, or if there was something to this fiat counterfeit paper currency thing, why is it that governments will not accept currency as a payment of debt? Have you thought about that? You see, they revel in fooling us, but they don't even try to fool each other. Now, government, folks, cannot choose a society's money. Only free traders can resolve the question. Money is not an invention of the state. It is not the product of a legislative act. The sanction of political authority is not necessary for its existence. If the government disappeared tomorrow, you would all in your individual communities accept a common denominator as your money, and you would continue to trade with each other as if nothing had ever happened. And I tell you now that the true primary articles of trade would be gold and silver. Certain commodities came to be money quite naturally as the result of economic relationships independent of the power of the state, and that's why its value is universal throughout the earth. Not just in one or two countries, but everywhere upon the face of this earth, no matter who you talk to, no matter what the race, no matter what the religion, no matter how remote or how populated. The brilliant Austrian economist Ludwig von Mises proved through his regression theorem that money must first be a freely traded commodity. To solve the baffling question of how a money came to be worth a certain unit price, Mises worked backwards. The value of money on its first day of use as money must logically stem from its consumption value on the previous day, when it was not money. And how does something have consumption value? By having intrinsic value, by being a commodity. So unless money was a commodity at one time used by the free market and individuals decided to start using it as money, there is no way for a money price to be conferred arbitrarily. No government can do it. Now, if you want to see how really stupid you have been and how foolish you really are, take a $1 bill out of your wallet, put it beside a $100 bill, and then try to explain to anyone, I don't care who it is, try to explain to anyone the difference between the two. The solution to making money work, folks, as a unit of account, a price, lies, as Mises showed, within the coordinating process of the free market. This insight proves devastating for any dictator, a band of elites trying to impose a new currency. When the transition from a barter to a money economy took place, the previous markets and commodity exchange ratios were not suddenly wiped out. The preferences individuals had made known were transferred to the new kind of economy, and money was used as a vehicle. It's a complex process to change from one sort of exchange regime to a new one. And no government authorities, no matter how wise, can replicate it. Money is not wealth. You see, money buys wealth. People accept gold because they can trade or spend it later. Comparatively little gold is actually consumed by industry. Gold money is traded, and that's what it's for. On this point, the miser Scrooge McDuck has transposed the means with the end. Although gold money indeed has intrinsic worth, its main value is exchangeability. The miser deceives himself that by having a pile of gold, he is rich. But can he eat, wear, or live in his gold? No, of course not. Unless the miser trades some of his gold for food, clothes, and shelter, he will die. That's how the infamous miser, Hetty Green, lived and died in abject squalor despite her $100 million estate. Being broke is a state of finances. Being poor is a state of mind. The miser is an illiterate fool collecting books. I hope you understand that. The miser is an illiterate fool collecting books. He cannot read. Money, folks, is a tool. Like any tool, if money is not used, one might as well not even have it. Clearly, money is meant to be traded or spent, not hoarded in a mattress. Wealth is not money. Wealth is bought with money. Wealth is things and profit-generating assets. Mitchell Innes said once, "The eye hath never seen, nor the hand touched a dollar." If gold and silver are money, then what is a dollar? A dollar is not a thing. It measures a thing. The term dollar is an adjective, folks, not a noun. According to law, a dollar is a unit of weight, like pounds or tons, which specifies a certain quantity of gold or silver money. And that's why your Federal Reserve note, which says $1, is counterfeit. It is, in fact, a lie. It's an instrument of debt, which says that someone owes someone else a dollar. And when you use it to buy something, capital goods, you do not own those goods, for you cannot purchase real worth with an instrument of debt. And that's why you pay taxes upon your property. And that's why you have a certificate of title for your automobile instead of the real patent title. That's why you have a warrant deed for your home and for your land instead of a real patent deed. What you have signifies that someone does indeed own the land, but not you. And that's why you have to pay registration fees and property taxes. Those are your rental payments. And if you fail to make even one of those rental payments, the true owner will repossess his property. Make no mistake about it. You see, our nation has been stolen out from under us. What you think you have does not indeed belong to you at all. The dollar began as the generally applied name of an ounce weight of silver coined by a Bohemian court count named Schlick. Now let me say that again so you'll understand really where this came from. The dollar began as the generally applied name of an ounce weight of silver coined by a Bohemian count named Schlick, and that occurred in the 16th century. The Count of Schlick lived in Joachim's Valley, or Joachimsthal. The Count's coins earned a great reputation for their uniformity and fineness, and they were widely called Joachim's Thalers. The name dollar eventually emerged from thaler, and eventually they were called trade dollars. As gold and silver had emerged as the reigning monies, the Founding Fathers declared that only gold and silver coin can be money in America, and gave the Congress power, quote, to coin money and regulate the value thereof, unquote, United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 5. In the 1784 debate concerning the nation's dollar unit of money, Thomas Jefferson said this, quote, "If we determine that a dollar shall be our unit, we must then say with precision what a dollar is," unquote. With this in mind, Congress wrote the 1792 Coinage Act. It's the 1792 Coinage Act, amended in 1900 and still in effect today, officially defining the dollar. Quote, "Just as an inch is 1/12 of a foot, or a quart is 1/4 of a gallon, a dollar is 1/20 of an ounce of gold. 10/11 fine," unquote. Also included in that act was the provision that anybody convicted of debasing or diluting the gold content of the dollar would be put to death. This harsh penalty was a reflection of how strongly the people felt about the previous painful episode of the worthless inflationary continental currency. I hope I have your attention. And I'm sort of sorry that I do, because I must leave you hanging there, ladies and gentlemen, because we have run out of time. It is the intention of the hour of the time to wake the sheeple, empower the people, and try to save freedom, not just for the United States of America, but for the world. If I have your attention, if you are awake, If you realize now how you have been defrauded and scammed and lied to, then it's time to look in the mirror and say to yourself, I have been stupid. I have been ignorant. I have been apathetic. I am a sheeple. But I am going to try my best to become a real people, a real American. Go out and get yourself a copy of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence and join us in this fight to save our great nation. Good night, and God bless you all.
Tomorrow all the things were gone, worked for all my life, and I had to start again, with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, but the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. Proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight through me. And I'd rather stand up next to you than it ain't hurt to today. But there ain't no doubt I love this man. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say. An American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight through me. And I'd like to stand up next to you and defend her till today. But there ain't no doubt I love this man. God bless the USA. There ain't no doubt I love this man. God bless the USA.
Had Better Call Swiss America. Thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time. Mention my name, William Cooper. Thank them for sponsoring this program and ask for all the newsletters and information be sent to you. Do it now. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. You'll be glad that you did.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. We'll be right back. two. A woman and the kids and the dogs and me.
America, land of the free, home of the brave? Not anymore. Not until Americans stop believing in these myths and these lies and these deceptions and these manipulations. We are all guilty. Jesus threw the money changers out of the temple, and you are setting up the tables for them and building their booths. And you are groveling and shining their shoes and scraping their coats for them. You are moving back the walls of the temple so that they can be more firmly rooted. More firmly rooted. When Jesus spoke of the synagogue of Satan, he was not talking about a Hebrew temple. He was not talking about the Jews. You see, the temple that he himself attended, the temple that he threw the money changers out of, the temple that he said was the house of God, was a Jewish temple. And all you arrogant, idiot racists out there who do not understand that when he spoke of the synagogue of Satan, he was talking about the old mystery religion of Babylon that was practiced in that day as well as this. And they are in control. The greater the truth, the greater the libel. Men are most apt to believe what they least understand. A truth's initial commotion is directly proportional to how deeply the lie was believed. It wasn't the world being round that agitated people, but that the world wasn't flat. When a well-packaged web of lies has been sold gradually to the masses over generations, the truth will seem utterly preposterous and its speaker a raving lunatic, and that is what most of you have dubbed me. It takes two to speak the truth, one to speak and another to hear. It takes nothing to hear. It takes great courage to speak. For my part, whatever anguish of spirit it may cost, I'm willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and to prepare for it. And that was spoken by Patrick Henry. George Bernard Shaw said, "If you do not say a thing in an irritating way, you may as well not say it at all, because people will not trouble themselves about anything that does not trouble them." My grandfather told me, "Bill, when you die, if you do not have any enemies, you have never done anything right." The phones are open, 602-333-2174. You may say anything you wish. It's not required to agree with anything that I have spoken here, now or ever.
Before Bill opens up the phone lines, I'd like to say that we are allowing our Constitution, our country, our freedoms to be taken away from us, and we must stop allowing that. We were not there standing by the church in Waco, Texas. We were not there, we Americans, standing on the steps at Washington for Project 93 to abolish the Federal Reserve and the income tax. We have another chance now, step three. In January, you could rethink your position on the income tax and take a step. We Americans could stand together. We must do this because we do not have much time left. We are confronting a large group, but not too large, because we are larger. There are 250 million people in America. How many do you think we are opposing? A few million? We can do it. We must call the people who are treasonous, treason. We must say it. We must point out who they are, and we must take them to task, or we will lose our country forever and freedom. Please listen.
Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is Grover. Bill, you, William, you're told me to stay up all the late overnight. Okay, what you doing? If you remember me calling last night.
Yes, I remember.
I discussed all day today with my son before he went to work about it. I had heard you say last night and what I had heard previously. And it's strange. There's a lot of little things that are out on in the public that nobody ever takes notice to. And when you was playing that song a while ago, I believe that was just went blank. I hate when I do that.
Come on, what's the point?
Oh, gosh. Well, anyway.
It doesn't matter who sang the song.
Okay. Well,
what's
anyway,
the point?
Freedom is just another word for nothing else to lose. And I was talking to my son about that today. And freedom, a whole lot to lose, and democracy has nothing to do with the public. It's a self-destructing government.
That's right.
And I can't get across my son. He says, oh, we're democracy. It looks like I'm going to have to get into research and reading and get into this. Because you make me feel kind of stupid, and I thought I was a little bit smart.
Hey, I was stupid, too, for many years.
And I love the way you come across. I mean, that's what it's going to take for these people. People are sheeple, and I swear they have to be drove. You can't lead them. They have to be drove. I appreciate you. I'm not saying anymore. Hank Williams Jr. was singing that song.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Put it on my mind. I got a one-track mind. But freedom is not another word. Freedom is a word we all have to fight for.
That's correct.
Freedom is a very important word.
We have nothing unless we fight for it.
It means nothing to nobody unless we fight for it. There's not a thing you have in your house that you appreciate unless you have worked hard for it.
That's correct.
And I know there's other callers.
Yeah, we got to go.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Appreciate you. Really do.
Thank you. Our country was founded in the root of the common law. The common law says that you have nothing unless you yourself can fight for it and preserve it and keep it, and no one else can do it for you. Good evening. You're on the air. Hello? Goodbye. Try it again. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, Phil.
Yes.
This is Larry from Monroe, Louisiana. How you doing tonight?
Good.
Listen to the first part of your show. I had to cut the radio off. It's too much static. I just want to say God bless you, Bill. You're doing a hell of a job.
Well, thank you.
Because I had your guts. I mean, compared to you, I'm a coward. I mean, I haven't paid income tax in 13 years, but it's not because, it's because I haven't worked at a job in 13 years.
I understand.
I wish I had your guts. I just, you know, I want to tell the New World Order to go to hell, and I hope they're listening. I wish they'd come and get me.
I can guarantee you they listen to this show.
I want to make a stand, whether it costs me my life or not. I'm sick and tired of the bullshit that's going on in this country, in this world. And there's just very few people like you who have the guts to say what you're saying tonight with the conviction that you say it with. And I just want to say God bless you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for calling.
Good night.
Good night. 602-333-2174. Remember, folks, don't put me up on a pedestal. I'll fall off real quick. I'm just like the rest of you. I'm just awake. I am awake, and I am angry. I understand what we're losing. I look at my children, and I know what they will not have if I do not stop this. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Bill. This is Dave in Northern Illinois.
Hello, Dave.
And all I'd like to say is freedom can only be won. The warfare is continuous, and each generation comes to the front to fight for it as though the battle had just been joined. That's by Bishop R.A. Brown.
Well, those are good words.
Have you ever heard that one before?
No, I haven't. I'll add that to my little repertoire here.
Yeah, that's in the book, The Most Secret Science, by Archibald E. Roberts.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night. Have
good
a good
night.
One.
Thank you for calling. 602-333-2174. Don't forget Carolyn's here if you'd like to talk to her. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. How you going?
You asked me that after everything?
I've been listening to you for a few months. Great. I really do enjoy it. However, I have to say something about the Brady Bill.
Go for it.
One of the parts on the Brady Bill, and I have in front of me the conference report that is attached to HR 1025. And part of the requirement is that you have to get a letter in writing from your local sheriff and or chief of police that you have been accosted by somebody and therefore you require a handgun. And the deal is, if you can't get this letter in writing from your chief, you can't get a handgun.
Well, I beg to differ with you. That's not true. That's for people who have to have a handgun, like right now, today. If I go down and say, I've got to have a handgun right now, today, then that's what I have to do to get it today. Otherwise, I have to wait 5 days.
Yes, but if you look at...
No, there's no buts. I've read the whole bill.
5 days to start with to get the permit application going. Then
no,
you have enough
no, that's not
days.
True. That's not
well,
true. That's not true.
Well, that's what I have in front of me.
Well, it's not what I have.
Can I send you a copy?
You certainly can.
Just hang on a second so I can get a piece of paper and
okay.
get your address so I can send it to you.
Okay. The number, the address, folks, is William Cooper, Post Office Box 1420. P.O. Box 1420.
Yep.
Sholo, spelled S-H-O-W-L-O-W, two words, Sholo, Arizona. 85901. Yes.
You will have that on Monday or Tuesday.
Thank you very much.
You're in for a shock.
Well, I don't think I'm in for a shock. We have the Brady Bill, unless somebody's putting out a phony copy of the Brady Bill.
The Brady Bill has yet to be written. It has been signed on this conference report. The actual bill is not going to come down for 6 weeks. And that's coming from my congressman in this area. This is in eastern Pennsylvania.
Well, I got news for you, friend. Your congressman is pulling the wool way over your eyes.
I hope so.
A bill cannot be signed unless it's been written. It's been passed into law. It's been signed by the president. We have a copy of it. Tell your congressman to go fish.
I hope you can, Bruce. I really do. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
602-333-2174. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Cooper.
Hello.
Hello. I was just curious, how computer literate are you? Because I'm a college student here in Wisconsin, and do you know anything about, like, the worldwide computer network called the Internet?
Hey, let me tell you something. I've been on computer networks before, and you can take all those little social misfits that hide behind their modems and their screens and strike out at the world and stick them where the sun don't shine and don't want anything to do with them.
Okay, because I just wanted to tell you that your word has been spreading like wildfire all over the network.
Well, that's good, but I still don't want anything to do with those people. I've been on there. I've watched the character assassinations and the attacks made upon people and the viciousness that exists on those computer networks. By little twit nerd cowards that wouldn't have the balls to stand in front of me and even open their mouth, much less say anything like that.
Well, it's obviously not the same people I associate with then, because the people I associate with are quite mature and they can discuss these things in a mature manner.
Well, I've never been on a computer network where I saw anything discussed in a mature manner. I've seen people throw out an idea and get absolutely crucified. And I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about just vicious attacks on people for no reason whatsoever other than they expressed themselves on the net. Now, if you're on that net, you know that that's true.
Yes, I've seen it too.
Okay, so don't bullshit me. I know it's true. 602-333-2174 is the number. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes. I just want to tell you, I appreciate your program, and do you know where a person could get a good copy of the Constitution? Do y'all have any?
Yeah, as a matter of fact. Let me give you an address right here. You can write to the Commission on the Bicentennial of the United States Constitution. Write this down. Just write to the Commission on the Bicentennial of the United States Constitution, 808 17th Street, Northwest.
Okay.
Washington, D.C., 20006. There's a phone number that you can call. It's 202-USA-1787.
The reason I was asking, I think it would be nice you know, it'd be pretty inexpensive for anybody to run off copies and, you know, and give them to people.
Well, that's about what people have to do because it's hard to find a copy that's true and correct.
Yeah,
and that's what I was doing when I left New Hampshire. If you've listened to an earlier program, I Xeroxed them off. I had them in larger print so that we used four sides of paper, two pieces of paper with four sides, and I just gave them out, and that was my entree to say hello and talk to people.
Well, I've thought about that. I'm a piano technician by trade, and I see a lot of people every day, and I'm just amazed, you know, where people are. They don't know anything that's going on, and most of them don't care.
That's right.
And, you know, I've had, like when the fire was at Waco, I went to a lady's house, and I was hot, you know, just really mad. And the first thing, you know, she said, well, there's too many guns around. And I said, okay, one day you'll wish you had some around, you know, if you don't change your attitude. And, you know, I probably never worked for her again, but, you know, people better wake up.
Yes, they better. And everyone out there, listen to me. The Constitution says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, period. Shall not be infringed. Any law that's passed restricting the sale or the possession of firearms in this country or any weapons whatsoever or the registering of weapons whatsoever are unconstitutional laws, do not have to be obeyed. And I'm telling you right now, do not ever give up your weapons. It is the only thing that stands between us and slavery at this very moment. If Americans had been disarmed last week, you would already be slaves tonight.
Well, the thing, you know, I think a lot of people, they just see one side of it. And
I think you're wrong. I don't think they see any side of it. Most people don't even know what in the hell is going on and could care less.
I know. I was talking to somebody. They were, you know, just crucifying the Surgeon General, I guess it was, about the drug deal. And I said, okay. I said, if you think about it, it was nothing but propaganda that made hemp illegal to grow anyway.
That's right.
And it's, you know,
legalize all that stuff and half of our problems would disappear overnight.
Because, you know, most of it is artificial.
Yeah. And farmers would have a new cash crop that would be incredibly productive and economically satisfying for this country. I got to let you go, my friend.
Thanks.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
602-333-2174. Good evening. You're on the air.
Mr. Cooper.
Yes.
Can you handle any more of Patrick Henry tonight?
Sure. Go ahead.
We are not weak. If we make proper use of those means which God of nature has placed in our power, millions of people armed in the holy cause of liberty, and in such a country as that which we possess, we are invincible. Besides, we shall not fight our battles alone. There is a just God who presides over the destinies of nations, who will raise up friends to fight our battles for us. The battle is not to the strong alone. It is the vigilant, the active, the brave. Many cry, peace, peace, but there is no peace. The war has actually begun. Why stand we here idle? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Wonderful.
I thought it fit in very well with your program tonight. Great program.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
Yes, goodbye.
602-333-2174. Got time for another couple of calls. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, hello, Bill. This is John from Virginia.
Hi, John.
Just a quick question for you. I agree with almost everything you're saying. Where do people get the courage to stick their foot over the line? Even the people that hear this and know it's true, who have families as you do, where do they get the courage to stick that foot over the line and say, I'll take a chance, I won't file, I'll step across this line?
Well, you're not stepping across the line if you do it within the law. I mean, you just don't decide not to file. You have to do it within the law. You have to revoke your Social Security status. You have to become, once again, a citizen of your state. There are certain things that you must do. You must revoke all contracts and all signatures. You must declare your sovereignty again under the law. You must do all of these things. And you must do it legally.
Have you done this?
But you're not stepping over a line, my friend, if you are within the law. That's why these people who were arrested, see, they tell the newspapers that these people are criminals because they were teaching people how to untax themselves legally. So the sheeple out there hear that and they say, oh, these people got busted because they weren't paying taxes. That's not true. You know what the charges are? Mail fraud, because they claimed 100% success, and the U.S. Postal Department regulations say you cannot claim 100% success.
Right. Well, my hat's off to you. It seems to me if you could get the ball rolling and get a little bit of a, maybe a half of a percent of people doing this, it would take off. It would all be over, but that's the hard part, is getting that ball rolling. Appreciate your efforts.
Only 3% of the colonists fought the Revolutionary War and brought this nation to fruition. They were all traitors against the King of England. They all stepped over the line. Without them, without their courage, without their genius, none of us would be free today, my friend.
Very true. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. What do you mean, step over the line? How dare you send your children off to fight a war in the desert somewhere? How dare you send me to fight a war in Vietnam? And then ask me something like that. And don't take it personally. I'm talking to all of you. If you pat your sons and daughters on the ass and send them off to fight a war in a foreign country and you haven't got the balls to stand up and fight for your own rights in this country, then as far as I'm concerned, I better not say it. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah, Bill, this is Rich in Willow Springs, Missouri.
Hello, Rich.
I just wanted to let you know that I'm one of those sovereigns. I filed the paperwork and everything last year.
Wonderful.
And it all does work. It's kind of a hassle for a while.
Yeah, it's a hassle.
Yeah.
But nothing worth having is ever easy.
Yeah, and I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
And you have yourself a good evening.
Thank you very much. Thank you for calling. Now, if you've been watching the news, especially the news broadcasts about these arrests that have been made, they have been telling you that 10,000 Americans, names that they got off the lists of these people, are going to be paid a visit. What a joke. Do you know how many IRS agents there are in this whole country? They couldn't pay 10,000 people a visit in 10,000 years, my friends. They are 90% bluff, just like the IRS agent said. Good evening. You're on the air.
Mr. Cooper?
Yes.
Weren't the founding fathers mostly Masons?
Yes, they were.
Is it possible they built into the Constitution and everything all the problems we're having today?
No, that's built into you and me, my friend. They just gave us the means to do it should we fail. You see, this was the great experiment. That's exactly what they called it. The great experiment was to find out whether man could truly keep his sovereignty and rule himself, or whether he needed someone to rule over him.
And one other thing.
We're failing the experiment.
Is it possible that communism failed because what we have in this country was a better form of control of people than communism?
No, that's not why communism failed. Communism failed because it's time to bring about the one world government, and you can't do it if you have the guise of two superpowers opposing each other. The Soviet Union was created by London, Wall Street, and Rome to serve a purpose, to create an antithesis to the Western world, to drag the funds and taxes and monies out of the people, to build the technology to rule the sheeple in the New World Order. They built the police force from our taxes that are going to enslave us in the future.
See, I've kind of thought of it as a design competition.
No, not at all. It's thesis, antithesis, clash between the two, the synthesis which brings everything closer to one.
When do you see all this finally happening? When they finally lock us down.
How can you guys ask me that? It's been happening. It's still happening. You've almost lost all your rights, and you're asking me when this is going to happen? I don't understand.
I mean, when
there were 1,000 people that came to Washington to abolish the Federal Reserve and the income tax, or maybe there were close to 2,000 people. That was September 29th, 1993. How many people came to Waco to stand by our fellow Americans who were fighting in their church for their life and who lost their life? And that's an exact picture of what is going to happen to us. Bill said something about, I forget, but I wanted to add that we will be killed as well. There are many of us who are going to be killed in this end struggle.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, well.
It's not when is it going to happen. It's happening. You're in the midst of it now. It's no longer when. The country is gone right now. We've lost our country. The only thing we can do is wake up and take it back before it's too late.
Yes, sir. Have you posted to your listeners that all of Congress is coming up for re-election next year?
Hey.
That's 12 months down the road.
Well, not only that, but we're out of time. Good night, folks, and God bless you all.
People, I think it's time we stop this running around. This world is going too fast and we'd like to slow it down. Don't let them talk you into doing what you don't want to. Just learn to say no and learn how to.